Howdy there, you're back. Thanks. So, we have a very special guest in the studio today. But before we start, our dear co-host Jackie won't be in this episode. But don't worry, the Houston Highness will be back the next episode, so chill out. And although we are lacking the other half to our fro today, I have a special guest who will certainly please your appetite for Southern Black knowledge. I would like to welcome LaKayla Williams.
Hey.
Hey, girl. Hey.
Hello. It's me, proper high priestess of the deep south.
Okay. I thought I was too much. You won that one real quick. All right. So, LaKayla, do you want to tell the people about yourself?
Okay. Well, born in the Mississippi Delta, moved to Houston, Texas at age 6, raised all the way until I started attending university here in Austin at the University of Texas at Austin. Undergraduate degree in radio, television, and film, and African and African diaspora studies. Currently working on my master's in women's and gender studies.
It's nothing.
And you know, after this semester, I will be moving on into the PhD African diaspora studies. I hate to brag, you know,
but I know my stuff.
But I know what I'm talking about exactly.
All right. Well, great. It's great having you here. So I thank you. Today's interview is about the role and portrayals of Black women in horror. You hear that?
We need to pray.
I know. Jesus. Anyway. Yes, horror. In this episode, we speak with Dr. Kenitra Brooks, who's a scholar of race, gender, and horror. She teaches about Black feminist theory, Black women in horror, and pop culture, and Afrofuturism at the University of Texas at San Antonio.
We talk about her monograph, Searching for Sycorax, Black Women's Hauntings of Contemporary Horror, and her short fiction, Sycorax's Daughters, which both examine the works of women across the African diaspora.
Also, LaKayla does my tarot card readings.
Yes, we get mystical.
I mean, are you ready?
Are you ready?
No, I'm not, bro.
Little early for Halloween, ain't we?
They have me gold.
Oh, it's your gold. Of course, you're a leprechaun. So we'll just hand it over to you.
I'd appreciate it.
Why don't you go home to your mama?
What'd you say about me, mother?
So, LaKayla, what's your favorite horror movie?
It's a toss-up between Thriller, because I consider that a film, or Leprechaun, Back to the Hood.
Okay, question. Hold up. Why Leprechaun, Back to the Hood?
Oh, it was just always so creepy and ratchet. So naturally, I was intrigued to it.
So for those who don't know what Leprechaun, Back to the Hood is, basically about like this, it's literally the title is self-explanatory.
It's the movie. The title of the movie is a little leprechaun. He's ghetto, and he's going back to the hood.
Yeah, that's exactly how it is.
How about yours?
So for me, mine was Chucky's bride, because she was always the baddest, you know what I'm saying? After she came alive, you know, she put on her makeup, she put on her lipstick, and she looked like a little gothic baddie, afterwards. And Chucky, like, you had all people thirsting and lusting after you. Chucky. Who has no heart. And one of the scare queens herself, Dr. Brooks, has written several pieces of work on horror, since we're speaking on it, of course, because this is the episode show. And one of them is called Searching for Sycorax, Black Women's Hauntings of Contemporary Horror. And in this monograph, she highlights the portrayal of work of Black women in horror movies and literature.
In the work, Brooks compares Sycorax from Shakespeare's The Tempest to Black women's inclusion in horror.
So Sycorax, who's a little witch baby, or just the witch, you know, whichever you prefer, is the foil for the main character in this play. And by many scholars, she represents silence to Black women.
Ironically, it's through the absence of presence of Sycorax, Dr. Brooks discusses, that white male anxiety about the power of Black women is revealed, and in a way that mirrors horror as a genre. Dr. Brooks expands.
This like weird, incessant sort of fear or uncomfortability with her presence, even now that she's dead. And so I talk about Black women in that way, Black women in horror, that they've been an absent presence. So they are made present by the very fact of their absence, and that their absence itself is a falsity, right? We've been here telling these tales in our literature, in our folklore, in our oral narratives, and it's just been up to other people to find it, not for other people to say it doesn't exist.
Dr. Brooks touched on this aspect of finding or searching for it, and I wanted to know if you actively searched for these novels or books when you were growing up, or were you like even aware that they were out there?
So I was always interested in magic, and that got started through Harry Potter. I was obsessed with Harry Potter as a kid, read all the books, and even thought I was going to get my own letter to Hogwarts all the way until I was 13.
No judgment.
Thank you. I appreciate it. You know, but all that to say that I was definitely interested in magic and the idea of, like, you know, making something out of nothing. And I just never saw myself reflecting in the type of...
Yeah, I think for me, I didn't even know that there were, like, horror, like, stories out there for me whenever I was growing up. So, like, you know, like you said, I didn't see myself reflected. You know, did you ever hear any ghost stories or anything from your family growing up?
So, yes, actually. There's this one that I will never forget. It's called Tallypo, and it's this, like, monstrous, like, ghost story about a man that goes hunting for his dinner, and he ends up taking something that don't belong to him. He gets messed up. And the greatest part about it is that in my town, the church that we went to, New Jerusalem MB Church in Rueville, Mississippi, and, you know, to keep the kids from being out in the streets on Halloween, yeah, every year the church threw Hallelujah Night. And Miss Burnside, one of the church elders, she was actually really close to our family, and she knitted me my first baby blanket. But every year at Hallelujah Night, she would get up. I mean, every year at Hallelujah Night, she would get up and tell the story of Tallypo to all those kids, and it would be scary. Oh, I was so scared.
I can't play like that. I know that, like, whenever I was growing up, like, my aunts and uncles would tell me. So, like, I'm from East Texas, so, like, St. Augustine, Nacogdoches area. Like, one of the tales was, like, one day my papa was, like, walking. My great-grandpa was walking down the street, and he, like, heard horses coming towards him, and he saw, like, the dust rising, and when he looked behind him, there was nothing there. But he saw, like, the dust was actually girl. And then, like, my aunt's house in Nacogdoches is supposedly haunted. Like, you always hear stuff. Girl, I saw him play with spirits all the time. See, I don't be trying to play like that.
Dr. Brooks expands on the importance of oral stories growing up.
I was taught about horror, and I was taught to love horror from my Aunt Arlen and my aunt Auntie Linda from my father's side of the family. They were hardcore nerds. They were a family of Black nerds. And they got me into horror films and horror comics. And my dad was a comic book fan. So that this has long been a part of our culture and who we are. I talk about Zora Neale Hurston in Every Tongue Got to Confess, where she's collecting stories, oral stories that focus on devil tales and Hank tales. So the horror is there. It's been there. It's just been couched and read differently because there are Black women that are creating it.
So speaking of literary works, I would like to say that for me, Toni Morrison takes the bag. Her words are so haunting and poetic, and it shakes me every time. In The Bluest Eye, which I don't even want to give the ending because you say you haven't read it yet. So, you know, how about you?
Definitely the short stories of Zora Neale Hurston always creep me out, but in a good way.
Yeah.
Like this one called Sweat.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, super creepy and super getting into that good old Black folk magic. And, you know, it keeps me reminded, like, you know, I need to make sure I do right.
Anytime you put good old at the end of anything, you probably should be watching out for it. Just saying.
I think that I would read Octavia Butler as horror, but I would also read Toni Morrison as horror, right? I talk about in Searching for Sycorax how a lot of times we didn't read Black women's writing as horror for some, I think, a reason about a sort of a literary respectability, right? So Beloved, what is Beloved but a ghost story and a haunted house story, right? But folks don't want to associate Toni Morrison with something, with genre literature, with horror. Right. I read Gloria Naylor's Mama Day, which is about a conjure woman, right? We've had people playing with spirits, playing with these ideas of the dead, these ideas of the ancestors that have long existed in our culture, particularly in the Black South and the Black Caribbean. And this is another way to read horror. And this is a way that I insist that Black women change horror, whereas in mainstream horror, practices such as like conjure women and voodoo and Santeria and Obeah, they're all these oogery boogery scary Black people. But when Black women write horror, when you have a Chesia Burke, right, in I Make People Do Bad Things, or in Chocolate Park, where she has a conjure woman who uses the spirits as a place of power, right? As a place in which to get revenge on the drug dealer who killed her son, right? To get revenge on the drug dealer who's been terrorizing the neighborhood. That starts to change what horror is and what horror looks like.
So Dr. Brooks talks about the sort of change, but she makes sure to highlight that it matters on who's the one actually doing the storytelling.
So again, I use Chesia Burke as an example of when Black women are writing themselves into horror, creating their own horror stories. But, you know, we also have where Black women are created by folks who are not Black women in horror, and that it can become problematic, right? And problematic in discomforting ways. So in Searching for Sycorax, I deal with comparing Robert Kirkman's The Walking Dead, the comic book series, and the construction of Michonne against 28 Days Later and the construction of Selena. Right, so you have these strong Black women who have these, Michonne has a katana, Selena has the machete in which they're all killing zombies and these sorts of things, and this problematic idea of Black women as abnormally strong and able to take care of others, but also this problematic idea that their strength comes from this masculinity that their dark skin sort of infers, right? And again, these are all, one, they're all old slave scripts. Two, they're continued issues that deal with Black women's aesthetics, Black women's place in society, and Black women's constructions of femininity or lack thereof. And so I'm bringing these ideas and bringing Black feminist theory to these problematic constructs of Black women in horror. So there's Robert Kirkman in the comic book series where Michonne is horribly gang raped by the governor. Spoiler. He didn't do it. He didn't dare do it in the television series because he was raked over the coals so horribly. But it changed something for me because he thought he was doing something interesting. He thought he was being, you know, cutting edge by including a Black woman and then, you know, putting all these quote unquote different stories about her. But he was really just revising old slave scripts. I was really looking at it like, whoa, this is like some, like, this is like a 19th century plantation drama, what's going on, right? Reminding me of what's going on in, like, you know, like the Blaxploitation Mandingo or something like that, right? And so he has the visuals of her being gang raped. And she is, and I have it in the book, where she is strapped to the cave wall with slave shackles, right? As they are taking turns raping her. And you see her body in between from the bottom of the way the visual is constructed between the man who's raping her legs and he has his pants down and you see through her where she's, you know, beaten. She's chained to the wall with slave shackles and all she's in is in a t-shirt, a dirty t-shirt. And at the end of that, in which she is raped as a woman and then later placed into a gladiator ring where she is then again punished as a man because she's a Black woman. You have to punish her with her in masculine ways and feminine ways, right? After that, when they're running away, Rick turns to Glenn and says, wow, that woman is a machine, because she's just like, I don't want to talk about it anymore. So you're having this Black woman where you are expressing how bad and how necessary it is to get revenge against these white male characters. You are privileging their character development over hers. And then you don't allow her to process. You have her, you actively silence her and blame that on her strength as a black woman. That's an issue. And that's an issue that he thought that he was being really, really clever with.
I totally understood where Dr. Brooks was coming from when conveying this, especially considering how this representation is tied to brutal scenes of the plantation. But Dr. Brooks also says who's doing right.
Kirkman is an example of what not to do, but there are folks who are doing good things who are not black women, who are doing interesting things with black women in horror. So you have 28 Days Later in the construction of Selena, where he starts off with this strong black woman, but eventually she becomes open. She becomes more complex. She becomes chaste even, right? And they all save each other from the dangers of the zombies. They save each other from the dangers of the humans that remain in the zombies, right? So Selena saves Jim. Jim saves Selena. There's an exchange, and there's a caring and a complexity to their relationship rather than, oh my gosh, she's raped, she's strong, she can handle it, right? You also have, we have like Death by Temptation, right? Where you have this black woman who is constructed as a demon figure and coming and seducing men and the succubus idea, right?
Dr. Brooks talked about the way black women are depicted and how we depict ourselves. But one of my favorite parts was actually talking about contemporary horror. So, like, Kayla, do you watch any new horror movies or thrillers that, you know, that just came out?
Well, you know, I definitely saw Get Out with
first
the
squad. First of all, did you yell in the theater? Because I was yelling.
I sure was yelling at that screen. I sure was.
No shame.
It's her.
Solidarity to all my people who be yelling at the screen in the theater. It's exciting. You know, we understand. We are here for you. I think, like, for me, Get Out was the same as well. Like, it was just, like, one of my favorites so far. But also one good point Dr. Brooks made that didn't make it to this episode is that horror is culturally based as well.
That's super interesting that some things that scare her don't scare her husband. It really makes you think about the nuances of cultural specificity.
It really does. And Dr. Kenitra kind of mentioned, because she's from New Orleans and her husband is actually from Africa. Mm-hmm. So, like, I'm just, like, imagining, you know, the movies and stuff that, you know, he's probably not scared of and she's probably not scared of. Mm-hmm. But she also talks about her favorite horror movies.
I love Vampire in Brooklyn. Or we have Angela Bassett. As the protagonist. I love, and it's hilarious, right? And I really enjoyed how Murphy mixed together both comedy and horror while having a respect for it. And we have to take note of the ghettoization of horror, right? And that it's not thought of as a real genre and it's often not taken seriously. And when it is taken seriously, it's changed to something else, right? So in classic literature, we study Frankenstein, Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, which is an early horror novel. But we don't define it as horror. We talk about it, oh, it's gothic, right? Edgar Allan Poe, oh, they're gothic. Well, you know, why do we have the need to distance ourselves from horror, from the idea of horror, and from the potentialities in which horror gives us. Okay, I'm supposed to be talking about my horror or my favorite.
No, this is
I love 28 Days Later because I think Selena is the most kick-ass character and she gets to be the damsel in distress at the end. And I think that is cinematically and thematically a very subversive idea of a black woman as a damsel in distress because we always expect it to go save everybody and their mama. And it's time more and more for someone to save us and for us to help in saving ourselves. But, you know, it's good to, like, you know, depend on someone else every once in a while. I love Demon Knight. Oh, Tales from the Crypt. Because I just love Jada Pinkett's character in there. She's so badass. You can do that. But she's just badass. She's just a badass character. And she's awesome. And she's strong without being that problematic strong character. She's clever. She thinks about things in really interesting ways. I just love it. I love it. But there's also horror literature, right? So we have Tanana Redu. We also have like Chesia Burke, who's a rising horror. She's a rising horror writer as well as scholar because she's getting her PhD in English literature as well. She has some interesting stories. We have, I think, N.K. Jemisin's Broken Earth series, which is dealing with horror in interesting ways where you have sort of these ideas of the horror of Black women dealing with the deaths of their children. And so we must start to distinguish between art horror, which is what we think of as the horror genre, and actual horror, such as the horrors of enslavement, such as the horrors of war, such as the horrors of murder. But a lot of times when Black folks, and particularly Black women, are writing horror, we're blending them together. We're exploring the ideas of horror, the horrors of enslavement, in supernatural ways that bring in ideas of art horror or the horror genre, right? And I think that's really, really interesting and something we need to continue to explore.
So, LaKayla, we always leave the show by asking one important question.
I know.
What am I going to ask?
You want to know how she feels about Beyoncé.
Oh, my God, yes.
You know, I think there are a couple of things. I think one, Candace Bimbo and Brittany Cooper were both like, you know, Beyoncé is not like that chick in eighth grade who made your life miserable and stole your boyfriend. I think people have to deal a lot with their own issues. She reminds a lot of people of that light-skinned girl that made their lives very difficult and that was the privileged one at the school and had the, you know, a certain cachet within the Black community. And again, I think that deals with other people's healing. I had to heal from my own sort of trauma dealing with being a brown-skinned girl growing up in New Orleans, Louisiana, right? Which wasn't fun in a lot of ways due to that. But I think when you heal yourself, you can allow others to be. And it's not that, you know, everyone has to, once people who don't like Beyoncé aren't healed. I don't want to make that intimation at all.
I mean, I'm okay with that excuse.
No, because there are some people who genuinely don't like her. And they're like, you know, but I think that's fair. You know, isn't going to appeal to everyone. And, but there are people who I'm not hugely a fan of, but it's like, I understand why you hate her. I mean, I understand why you love her. I'm sorry, not hate her. So for me, I respect folks who are like, listen, I ain't with the Beyoncé thing, but that's your thing. Enjoy the heck out of it. My issue comes when people are like, oh, you're sheep. You love Beyoncé. You in the Beehive and all this stuff. And I like real music and all these. And it's like, you know what? She is talking about Black women's healing in a very interesting way. And she made a, Harry Benshoff, who's a film scholar at University of North Texas, he said, Beyoncé made everyone watch a 55-minute avant-garde film. How many people can do that? Right?
Yeah.
I think she is an interesting lightning rod and why she's interesting. I also think that she means something for Southern Black women. You know, you have someone who's privileging Southern Black women's stories, and a lot of people don't do that, and we are ignored. And so when someone is doing me and women who look like me and doing us well, I have to give you the props.
So, LaKayla, how do you feel about the queen?
Well, I'm just going to answer in my customary Houstonian dialect.
Okay.
That's the queen bee.
Okay.
You know, we're repping over here. We're repping the SWAT, Southwest Elite, Texas. We got Beyoncé repping Third Ward.
Okay.
Everyone, like, knows the importance of Lemonade.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, people knew that the self-titled album was a huge deal, but
I mean, Lemonade, I mean, like, I feel like Beyoncé really be trying it. Like, anytime she puts braids in her hair and she has that laptop in her hand, we know that she is always doing something.
She's up to something. So, first and foremost, you know, shout out to Courtney Alexander, who is the creator of this amazing Dust to Onyx tarot.
Okay. Who is she?
She is a queer Black woman artist from Florida.
Okay.
Based in Florida.
Okay.
She started this deck out of a desire to create a deck, you know, that represented her. Mm-hmm. So with this deck, you have, it's called a melanated tarot, and yeah. The people are melanated in
yeah.
it.
Yeah. So, like, it has, like, a purple, black, orange, green depictions, grape depictions. It's really pretty. I wish you could see radio.
Yeah.
But you can't.
You can't see.
Awkward. Anyway.
So, but just in general, go check her out. And we want to thank her, thank the ancestors for her, and for the creation of this amazing deck, which is what I'll be reading for D'Elia.
God.
So, first and foremost, this can just be super simple. This could just be like a past, present, future spread, 3 cards.
Okay.
It could be a situation, action, outcome.
Okay, I want past, present, future.
You want past, present, future?
Yeah.
Okay. So, just tell me what's been going on, just in general.
Oh my God, I gotta put it all out there. Okay. So I would say I've just been like really, really busy lately.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just like tired, just trying to treat my body better. I gotta shuffle them while
mm-hmm,
I talk.
Mm-hmm. You gotta put your energy into the cards.
But I have no good. Okay. All right. I'm just trying to stay catch up, planning a wedding. Mm-hmm. So, like, yeah.
So it's just a lot. It's a lot of clutter.
Yeah.
I think what we're gonna do is we're gonna just look at, you know, everything that's happening that's got you to this point.
Okay.
You know, how in this moment, like, what the importance of it is,
okay,
what lessons you're supposed to be learning,
okay,
how you can use everything you're going through to kind of, like, shift your perspective.
Okay.
And, you know, what the future of that might look like.
All right.
So, it's okay.
Okay. My grandma said I can't mess with this type of stuff. And I'm telling your mama.
No. My mama said I can't mess with this type of stuff. Ooh,
I'm telling your mama.
You went there. You knew exactly what you was doing. All right.
All right.
Ooh.
Okay.
This is the Grace Jones card.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Standing in for the Emperor.
Okay.
We have the Moor.
Okay.
Ooh, so we got the Majors out.
You're making me scared.
Ooh, and we have the Lovers. Oh, wow. Oh. And you're getting married.
Oh, I love you, Dick.
I told you there was nothing to be nervous about. This
okay.
looks good.
Okay, so they're, what does this mean?
These are all Majors. They're all from the Major Arcana, which are supposed to symbolize those major movements in your life.
Okay.
As opposed to the other cards in the deck are okay. the Minors. They're just like incremental movements.
Okay.
All right, so for this first card, the Chief, this is signifying sort of the past.
Okay.
Understanding, like, you know, the Chief as symbolizing sort of your role within your work and
okay.
how it's coming together with your wedding plans.
Okay.
And how you're organizing that. So the Chief is characterizing sort of the attitude. And some key words for the Chief are integration, accomplishment, fulfillment, wholeness. That sounds...
How you gonna read me while you're on the podcast?
I mean, I'm reading your tarot card.
Oh, my God.
It's the point. So next we have the Moor, which is characterizing your present situation.
Jesus.
So this is very interesting because this is representing you like in the crosshairs like of a moment with all of this business and
yeah.
like everything that's going on. And so the Moor is kind of keywords for the Moor are kind of like growth, tradition, institution, teaching. And, you know, you're at a point where you're, like, shifting your perspective, like,
yeah.
on all of these things.
Yeah.
Especially these ideas of tradition and growth.
Yeah.
Which have a lot to do with, you know, both your work and your upcoming,
yeah.
like, personal plans.
Yeah.
And so, the Moor is just here to remind you, like, you have...
Oh, my God, I'm gonna cry.
Don't cry.
Oh, my God.
You have these knowledges that are innate, you
okay.
know. You can use, you know, from your ancestors
yes.
or, like, maybe... Black women in your family that, well, all, your family is all black women, but women in your family that, like, you know, are passing down some type of, you know, knowledges or stuff, let them guide you through it. Like, don't be afraid to, like, tap into others' knowledges.
Oh, my God. Like, why are you reading? Oh, my God. I was literally going through this the other day. Okay. It's too emotional for me right now. Go ahead, read the last one.
I
can't do this.
It's always a big thing. All right. So, next we have the Lovers. characterizing your future situation. So this is talking about unity in all aspects of your life.
Okay.
In your love life, like literally the binding of your souls, which a wedding signifies mm-hmm. as a holy spiritual event.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the sort of integration of creative endeavors, mm-hmm. you know, and it might seem cluttered. It might seem the fact that these are all like major, like yeah. are letting me know that this is this clutter and all of this going on is not in vain. Like these are like, this is a really potent and particularly rich and important time where a lot of major things are at play.
I just want to let you know, talk it up. That's what I'm saying. Like this is what mm-hmm. I need in my life. I mean, I'm feeling good.
Mm-hmm.
Do I think that spirits are going to arise and come after me? Yeah.
They won't.
Yeah.
It's everything is about intention.
Okay.
Like, you want to have the best, wholesome, loving, positive intentions into everything. So, for me, example, sometimes I'll be, you know, preparing certain types of spiritual baths mm-hmm. or doing things to help, like, my spiritual health. I'll play gospel music. I was playing Order My Steps in Your Word. While I was getting this spiritual bath together, and yeah. like that to me felt like it felt right,
yeah,
because you know gospel music and like you know it's Christian, it's come from Christianity, yeah. but Black Christianity in the South is very much tied to these African cosmologies. This is just a way for us to uncover like
yeah.
some of the secrets and stuff that we can't just. We have trouble figuring out, like, normally, like, just in our mundane lives.
Yeah.
And so it's not going against anything. It's not evil.
Yeah.
Like, it's very much about your intention. So, of course, you can do bad stuff with it. If you're intending to go in and do something bad to somebody. Yeah.
But you're good.
You're good.
Pure. Do I trust you? Yes, I do. am I scared still? Yes, I am. Well, I wanted to say thank you, LaKayla, for reading me. yeah, this is fun.
Thank you. No, thank you for listening and being open.
Oh.
I appreciate it. Also, I'm still super new to this. All right, so we're at the end of the show. So, Dalia, what's your to and fro moment this week?
My to and fro moment is, like, basically just treat your body well and get some rest. Like, literally, I worked from 5 a.m. to 10 today. I only had, like, maybe 4 hours of sleep. Am I delirious? Yeah.
Mm.
Okay, that's cool. But, Dalia, you got to get it together, you know? That's my to and fro moment. Just take care of yourself, and then watch what you're putting in your body as well, because, like, literally, it's fuel. Like, yeah. What about you?
My to and fro moment is do not be afraid to walk into those open doors, you know? Sometimes, you know, heads just so in the clouds or, mm-hmm. like, so far in the future, in the past, that we're not even noticing the opportunities that are being made for us.
Okay.
In the moment.
Okay.
So, like, shoot, walk through those doors, because you can turn right back around and walk out.
I mean, you out here pursuing a whole PhD, you know what I'm saying? You over here walking into windows, doors.
Closing them and locking them.
I mean, that's fine, too. Well, that's the end of the show.
Make sure to tell your friends about us and follow us on Twitter at The To and Fro and on Facebook.
And music is by Honey Banks. Follow her on Twitter at Miss Chris Honey B.
Dalia, do you have something to leave the peoples with today?
Anytime you get mad at anybody, all you have to say is bless that sweet little soul of hers.
Oh, yes.
Southern sass with a hint of pettiness always.
A full dash.
A full dash. You know what? Go ahead and just a whole cup. Just go ahead and throw it in there.
Except we from the South, so we don't use measuring cups.
Bam. There you go. Bye.